Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Monday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and finally making it back to us, Dan the Man. Hey, if you'd like to call into the podcast, 678-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings, but you should stop by there, see what's going on. You never know what might pop up while you're away. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, there's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, you can find Dan and I on Twitter as well. I am at Sports Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with three.
Oh, all right. I'm tired. I don't know. It's Monday. I guess it's just one of those draggy days, and it's kind of dreary out. But since it is Monday, we will start off with our well, pretty much normal Monday feature. And Dan will start by telling us who his American League Player of the Week is, how come he went against the media this week.
Oh, I didn't know I went against the media, but, you know, this young man, the hitter of the week, played in all seven games. Well, hitter, since we don't really consider fielding, played in all seven games with 29 at-bats. You know, he crossed the plate five times himself with 11 hits, five doubles, three home runs, nine RBIs, with only three strikeouts, which is kind of low. He posted the highest OPS of the week and the highest slugging percentage with, you know, mediocre, kind of middle of the road on base, with his batting average sitting at 379. And I'm surprised that this is not the national media player of the week, seeing as he is a New York Yankee and he plays third baseman, Miguel Andujar.
Yeah, the media went with Nick Castellanos, or Nicholas, excuse me. It's now Nicholas Castellanos. So there you go.
Why was it, because of the five walks and six strikeouts? Or?
I don't know. They never say. I just saw it on the crawler, and I was like, oh, okay. That was before I knew who you went with. So I was kind of like, oh, okay. You know, we'll have to see what happens. But, yeah, that was their pick for the week. So I didn't have anybody in this one. I don't know. I wasn't, you know, I'm sure Mr. Fantasy would have picked Jose Abreu. He had a good week.
Yeah, he had a pretty solid week, but, you know, I'm going with a player from a winning team.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Did they win last week? I don't even know. So.
Yeah, but they're in a playoff run, unlike the White Sox or the Tigers.
Yeah. You know, they won't be in the playoff run for a long time, either of those two teams, unless something really odd happens. But all right, well, we'll swing over to the National League here, where you were in full agreement with the media. So, who'd you take there?
Well, I mean, this guy played eight games in 7 days, was crossing the plate himself 11 times, 13 hits, only two of them are doubles, but four of them are home runs. And of course, today I picked him to hit a home run. Urania decided to hit him instead. And that's Ronald Acuna Jr., which I don't know if I'm sure you talked about that, but that was just pretty crappy on Urania's part.
Yeah, except they made it such worse of a case than it actually was. You know, they acted like it was the first time it ever happened in baseball, and he should be thrown out of the game. I'm so glad he took the game and shut down the Nationals yesterday to kind of stick it in their face, because he didn't deserve the villainy they gave him. you know, he hit a guy which what should have been in the rear end, and he moved his elbow into the way because he reacted, you know, and then they made it seem like he was trying to kill him when I can't remember who it was, threw it Beth's head. Oh, Luis Severino, and that went away. Oh, well, it's the Yankees. That stuff is going to happen. Screw you guys. That's what I got to say to that. But, yeah, I had a Acuna in the home run derby one day, too, and he didn't homer for me either. So he must have hit those four homers when you and I didn't have them. So, but, yeah, he was pretty much the unanimous choice. You know, I mean, you know, obviously he had a really good week. You know, I mean, there were some other contenders, you know, Paul Goldschmidt, Justin Turner did really well. So there were a lot more candidates, I think, in the National League. I, of course, would have went with Starlin Castro just because he's Starlin Castro, and I need to find a way to work him into the podcast every day, one way or the other. But that, you know, that would have been me, and he did hit 400, so I would have had a little bit of a case there. But, you know, so we'll, you know, we'll see how it goes. But all right, let's get over to pitching here, starting in the where do we start? We start with the American League. You'd think I would know that after just going through two hitters. So you kept showing your love for pitchers, your Yankees in the American League. So which Yankee hurler did you go with?
Well, I went with the guy who pitched the absolute most innings last week at a high of 12.1.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, he gave up 8 hits, which is kind of a downer, but he only gave up 2 earned runs. Of those 2 home runs, he walked 5 but struck out 12. But he went 2-0 in his J-Hop. I just felt like he had the, of the top, you know, 6 guys, I felt like he was probably the best.
I just think it's kind of humorous that it took him 2 games to strike out 12 and Gerrit Cole did it in 1. But, you know, just kind of one of those things, you know. Pitching-wise, it was pretty limited. You know, Mike Clevinger had a good week, and so did Brad Keller from the Royals. You know, I think they were really the top 3 guys you kind of had to choose from. You know, a couple relievers picked up a couple wins, and Cam Bedrosian did get actually, he blew a save, so that wasn't what I was looking at there. So, yeah, it was Trevor Cahill did have a fantastic outing, even though he only made the 1 start. You take in consideration, he pitched 7 shutout innings, only giving up 1 hit to the Astros. So, he was a guy who could have been hanging around there. But, you know, it works out. So, all right, well, let's switch over to the National League and tell us who you went with and why over the other. Boy, you just got a New York thing going on, don't you? All right, give us your well, there's only 1 Met pitcher to really pick, so tell us why you picked DeGrom.
I picked DeGrom because it was early, and I really liked the 21 strikeout. But, you know, now that I'm reevaluating, I really think Julius Chafin should be the pitcher of the week.
Yeah, boy, he's all of a sudden he's a big stud for Milwaukee. He went from journeyman to ace. You know, 2 starts, 1 both 13 innings, didn't give up a run, only 7 hits. I think one of those outings was against the Cubs. Is that why you picked him originally? Because he pitched one of those games against the Cubs.
Pretty much. No, but you know, I'm gonna stick with my original pick of Jacob DeGrom. You know, he went 2-0, 15.2 inning. He did give up a monstrous 12 hits, but he struck out 21 and only walked 2. With only giving up 2 earned runs, so pretty solid.
Yeah, no, you know, he had a good week. And then, you know, surprisingly, you know, German Marquez has been really good as of late, too. It's you start looking at the National League pitchers and you hear these names, and I guess, you know, you get it in the American League, too, and it's just kind of like, man, where the heck are these guys coming from? So.
Yeah, you know, kind of making a little light of the situation, but with the situation the Cubs have going on, do they try to trade Tyler Chatwood for Herman Marquez?
Yes. So if anybody would actually take that, you know.
Yeah.
So
you'd
have to
pick up. a third of the contract for the next three seasons.
So, you know, they can always, you know, you can always go get Bryce Harper, because now, you know, the Nationals are going to trade Bryce Harper again. So, you know, you would get absolutely nothing for him for, you know, a month and a few weeks, but that doesn't matter because they got to trade Bryce Harper. So,
does the MLB, and I'm trying to look real quick, do they have a waiver wire tracker so you know who's cleared waivers?
No, no. It would be nice if they did, though, wouldn't it? So, normally they'll announce when somebody makes it waivers.
Right.
You know, it hasn't. You know, they don't really have a way. Yeah, and they, you know, that was the other funny thing. Like, you know, Bryce Harper is going to make waivers. So.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't it seem like the Rays be the first on that list to be able to claim him? Or?
Well, I would think, you know, whoever gets first shot would be the first team to claim him. I mean, they would be stupid not to. You know, I mean, if they're going to trade you Bryce Harper, hey, great, we can have him for the rest of the year and pump up our attendance, you know, as we do absolutely nothing.
Yeah, well, no, I don't remember who was in line for waiver wire, but I always knew it kind of went to the bottom up, didn't it?
I'm trying to remember who's got the worst record, if it's Baltimore or if it's it might even be Kansas City.
Is that based on this season or last season?
This season. It's the currently where you are. The ridiculous stupidity of these guys, because it's almost like they have to find a way to, you know, like I was joking about working Starling Castro into every podcast. It's almost like they have to find a way to work Bryce Harper into every one of their shows. So we got to talk about him being, you know, trade bait, even though he's, you know, I mean, what team in their right mind would make a deal for him now? And, you know,
Well, you know, I'm kind of sticking on the hottest players in the game today. I heard a little talk about Mike Trout, and the way he was described, you know, he was described as what a baseball player should be. You know, he's, you know, able to play the field. He's able to adapt to different pitchers, you know, when he comes up to bat. He's able to adjust in the outfield and, you know, run the bases. He's pretty much the all-around player. And he's, you know, quoted as being the greatest MLB player today. But, I mean, doesn't that just sound like what a baseball player is supposed to be instead of this specialization that they try to instill on everybody?
Yeah, I mean, you didn't describe anything different than, you know, how's that different from, you know, Betts or Jose Altuve or any of the top players in the game. I don't get that at all.
Well, I guess my point was, like, I feel like they've dumbed down the game so much that a guy who does the job he's supposed to be doing warrants calling him the best player in the league when, you know, that's what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I heard the stupidity over the weekend. You know, they were talking about who's the American League MVP, and even though, you know, Trout has now been out for, I think it's coming up on it, it might be his third week, there's still people pumping him for MVP, even though the Angels are nowhere close to being in the playoff hunt, and, you know, there are clearly better guys in this situation to, you know, win the award.
Mm-hmm.
But they, you know, they're not letting up on any of it. He's the guy who's gotta win it all, no matter what. And it's like, okay, we're really off our frickin' rockers here with this, because, you know, again, not that he's not a great player, but he's not the most valuable. So.
Hmm. Well, and I think you just kind of hit the nail on the head and really kind of defined that vote for me. If we had it, where, you know, his numbers and everything is great, but like you said, it's not the most valuable. You know, I guess we got to go back to LeBron. I got to get that soundbite right.
I don't know. It's just baffling with, you know, the way they think and the way they talk and, you know, the kind of choices they make with things, you know. And again, you know, we are talking about the guy who's probably the best player in the game, but does that automatically make him the most valuable? So, you know, I mean, Barry Bonds was the best player in the game for how long? How many MVP awards did he win? Did he win it every year? I don't remember him winning it every year. You know, they didn't talk about Bonds like this, but he was clearly the best player. You know, Ken Griffey Jr. was the best player for a long time. He didn't win it every year. So.
Oh, you know, Sammy, Mark.
Well, I don't know if you'd ever consider McGuire the best player in the game. He was the best power hitter in the game, but I don't know if he was ever the best player. He wasn't a great, you know, all-around player. But Sammy, definitely, he was right there. You know, I mean, yeah, you can kind of, you know, go on and on. And, I mean, you know, the biggest question you got to ask with this is you've got guys like Betts and Martinez and Altuve and, you know, you can even throw like a Gene Segura in there and, you know, even Machado now that he's a Dodger. I know it doesn't count in the American League, but these guys are performing on winning teams in pressure situations and they're putting up numbers equal to or in some case better than Mike Trout's. But for some reason, I mean, are you telling me that Mookie Betts, Jose Altuve, and Manny Machado aren't great all-around players? Is that what I'm supposed to take away from this?
No, pretty much. With the numbers that JD Martinez put up, which, to be honest, I thought the Red Sox were a little crazy with the contract they gave him.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do you think they're in the spot that they are without him? I mean, I still think they would be a playoff contending team. But do you think they would be as high up as they are if they didn't sign him?
You know, I mean, what was their problem last year? They were lacking a big run producer in the middle of the order like David Ortiz. They went out and got the guy. Now, look at him. So, you know, and I know the guy I left out of the conversation was Jose Ramirez. He's second in the American League in home runs. I believe he's second in RBIs, and he's first in stolen bases, and he's hitting 300. He's also walked, 25 times more than he struck out. You're not telling me that's an MVP candidate on a first-place team that's basically crushed their crappy division, but Mike Trout deserves your vote more than he does? I don't get it. So, you know, for the life of me, it's just one of those things, and I always feel bad because I feel like I'm the guy who's always got to kill Mike Trout, and I don't even dislike him. I think he's a great player. But, you know, it's just the way they bend you over and stick him up your rear end. Like, you know, is he the greatest player to ever play the game? I mean,
I don't think so.
He'll probably go down as one of them, sure. If he can stay healthy and keep going. But, you know, they act like he reinvented the game.
Well, and the way things are going in Anaheim, he's going to go down as one of the greatest players to never win a World Series.
Yeah, you know, I mean, on his stat line right now, he's the next Ernie Banks. You know, unless things change in Anaheim, he's going to go on to have a fantastic career and never play in a World Series. So, you know, and I mean, it was just one of those things. You know, Banks, a great player, but the Cubs sucked every year there. I think he still won two MVPs on bad teams. So, you know, just, you know, one of those things. And you got to remember, this was also the guy who at the beginning of the year they tried to, you know, sell that Shohei Ohtani was the best player on the Angels. So, you know, it just depends which way the wind is blowing on how they're going to react to you. So.
Well, and now it's almost become Shohei who?
Yeah. Yeah, when was the last time you heard somebody talk about him? So I didn't hear anybody mention anything until he had a bullpen session last week to throw a little. So. You know, just kind of how, you know, how that stuff went. So.
Well, that's exciting because maybe he'll be ready to pitch by September 9th when they, in a couple of weeks when they come here to Chicago to play the White Sox.
So, yeah, you know, I'm under the impression that they're probably not going to let him pitch again this year, but, you know, you never know. We'll have to... you know, we'll have to see what they actually do, but you know, who knows?
I just know because we're going out of that game. So,
I did mean to ask you now that you've cast your player of the week ballot here. Has Miguel Andujar passed Gleyber Torres as the American League Rookie of the Year?
Trying to be quick, but I think we're kind of in that realm. You know, it's never rookie of the year, never is the guy that everyone projects.
No, you know what's odd is it's rarely a guy who seems to start the year with his team. And I was trying to look for some rookie stats, but good old MLB.com won't come up for me. I'm just getting the blank screen, so I'm guessing they don't have it ready. So. Which is always fantastic. Just what I need when I need stats and I go to get them. Nobody's ever got them for me. What's the problem there? I don't understand it. So, but, yeah, you know, because
right.
I'm trying to think, you know, off the top of my head, you know, because I don't really hear him talk about too many other rookies except Torres and Andujar. So I don't know who else is even in the running. Is there a rookie pitcher having a good year we don't know about?
No, he's hurt pitching-wise. So.
Yeah. So, you know, and I'm guessing, you know, we were talking about Ohtani. I'm guessing he's not going to win the award now. So.
No, and, you know, the few stats I've got on Andujar, here we go. You know, in 113 games, he's had 432 at-bats, 63 homers, 129 hits. There we go, 20 home runs, 65 RBI, 18 walks. But he does have a 79 strikeout. And his batting average is .299.
You know, he's a rookie, so. You know, that's just kind of how it goes. So, let's see if I can find anybody else here that... Okay, well, I found the ESPN one, and they break it down into two rookies. You get two rookies for batting stats, that's Miguel Andujar and Joey Wendell. So I don't know if they forgot about the other guys. Or we'll try non-qualified and see if I can get a few more guys, because I'm guessing that's how they were ranking it. Yes, here we go. This helps me out a little bit more. Oh, that was funny. I'm sorry. I can't help myself there. I don't know what you kind of need to be a contender. I mean, I mentioned Wendell. He's had a good year on a Tampa Bay club that's been surprisingly good, but he's not, you know, I'm assuming Andujar and Torres are going to finish 1-2. You know, just looking at the other names, you know, Nico Goodrum from the Tigers, a couple Rangers, Ronald Guzman, and that Isaiah Kiner falafel. You know, Bowers, but he's only 214 with the Rays, so I don't know. Let's see if I can find a maybe there's a rookie pitcher I can sell you on here. if at all possible. Let's see who we can find. Oh, you stink. You're going to be one of those things. Okay, where is it? Come on. There we go. Boy, there's a lot of jumping through hoops to go through to get the what you want to find on the this site here. It's not as simple as this kind of bang, here you go. All right. Well, yeah. Oh, here you go. Ryan Yarbrough is 11-5 with the Tampa Bay Rays. You buying him?
Who?
Ryan Yarbrough.
I don't know. You have to give me some more info.
Well, he's 11-5. He does have a 4.01 ERA, but he has 101 strikeouts and 39 walks in 114 in the third innings. He's pitched in 30 games and made 5 starts.
I mean, it's not bad, but I don't think I'd go rookie of the year with that.
Well, that the setup guy from Oakland is a rookie. I didn't realize that. That Lou Trevino. He's been in 52 games, pitched 60 innings, 26 walks, 65 strikeouts, 8 wins, just 2 losses, 4 saves, and has an ERA of 1.65. If it really impresses you, his WAR is 2.3.
Because I don't think a setup man would ever get that award.
Yeah, you know, he's had a really good year. I don't think it's better than probably Andujar or Torres, but you know, I think he'll get some votes. That won't surprise me. I am trying to figure out, can you explain to me why they have Senwan Oh in as a rookie? Did they not remember that he pitched for the Cardinals the last few seasons?
Maybe he has a son in the league and we don't know it.
Yeah, so maybe they switched up on us, and you know. All right, here, let's see if I can find one more guy. All right, here you go. Brad Keller, we talked about him earlier. I think you'll like him because he has the highest rookie pitcher WAR at 2.5. Is that enough for him to get your votes?
No.
It's WAR. You know you love the WAR.
Yeah, the card game is fun.
So not enough to help you out there, huh? All right.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you're thinking Andujar is what you're thinking then over in the American League?
Yep. I think he's by far the man.
Who's the front runner in the NL? I really haven't.
Acuna. I don't think.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm trying. Yeah. Does he even have a challenger?
David Bodie?
Only if he found it too and doesn't have a bat. So, you know, I'm trying to think here. I'll find somebody for you here. Let me see. I think Pudge Wood is a rookie. Pudge's having a pretty good year in San Francisco, but I'm on hitters right now. So let's see if I can find some guys after I surf through all the BS sorting the categories on this website. Well, there is Brian Anderson from the Marlins. He's had a pretty good year. I don't think it's quite as good as Acuna's, though. Oh, you know, what about Juan Soto from the Nationals? So, you know, just kind of a comparison. Oddly, they're both hitting 290 right now. Where are we? Acuna has 19 home runs. Soto has 15. They each have triple. Acuna has 18 doubles. Soto has 17. Acuna scored 81 runs. Acuna has 81 hits. Soto has 80. Soto has 54 runs scored. Acuna has 53. And Acuna has 3 more at-bats. But, Dan, Acuna's WAR is a 3.0, and Soto's is just 2.1. So I don't know. I think that just kind of really pushes it over the top, even though Acuna struck out 84 times and only walked 24, while Soto has 63 strikeouts and 58 walks. But that WAR, Dan, that 0.9 difference in WAR, I think is really, really going to push Acuna past them, don't you think so?
Not in popularity.
That's huge. So, you know, you gotta look out for those things. I'm trying to see if there's anybody else here that might even factor in. Well, you know, for a while, Christian Villanueva hung around. He does have 20 bombs, but that average has dropped to 236. Wow, Dan, how bad is it when you have 20 homers and only 46 RBIs? Does that mean your team's just not helping you out at all?
Well, RBIs.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I keep forgetting they don't matter anymore. You know? All right, well, let's see if we can find. Maybe there's a pitcher. You know, like I said, I know Derek Rodriguez is having some. You know, has made some really, really good starts there out in San Francisco. But I don't know if there's anybody who's been, like, dominant to the point where he would jump off the stat board as a, you know, as a rookie of the year type of guy. So,
do the Pirates have any?
I don't know. I'll tell you in a second here. I'm just, like I said, this website is such a pain to sort, because you have to go through like three or four different categories to get to get to what you want, and then it really slows down and takes its time for you, and you know, just as soon as you want to click a category, it jumps and resets. Yeah, I don't know. Andrew Suarez has the most innings for a rookie, but he doesn't have the stats to back it up. Here's Rodriguez has made. He's pitched in 14 games, 12 starts, 80 innings. He is 6-1, and his ERA is 2.25. I don't know if that's enough to pass like Acuna or even Soto, but he's done well. What about Josh Hader? You know, he is closing for the Brewers now. 59 innings, he has 106 strikeouts. He's 4-1 with 10 saves, and he's got an ERA of 1.52. Does he get some votes from you?
Yeah, but his Twitter account ruined it for him.
Yeah, so. You mentioned the Pirates do have they have Edgar Santana and Richard Rodriguez. They're a couple of setup guys. So I don't know if you're looking to go that route. The Braves do have a guy, A.J. Minter, who picked up 11 saves. He's 4-2 with a 3.24 ERA. You know, I'm sure he'll get some votes, but I don't think he's winning anything. So those are, you know, what do you think? You think the Phillies closer now might have enough time to get there? That's Sir Anthony Dominguez. He does have 14 saves. His ERA is 2.28. He is 1-3, but for a closer, records don't really matter. Do you think he's got enough time to put up enough numbers to maybe contend?
I think he has enough time, but he really has to shut everyone down for the next 2 months.
Yeah, that's going to be the key, obviously. But yeah, those are just some of the some of the rookies kind of hanging around. It looks pretty. It looks pretty cut and dry, but you never know. You know, maybe somebody gets hot or something else happens. So we'll have to see. Oh. So yeah, there was a. What's the big series? Are the Astros going to Seattle now? Is that the big game here for coming up? Because I think Felix is making the start today.
Oh, wow! Do you finally get a start out of him?
Yeah, finally. So
tonight, tomorrow, Wednesday.
Yes, it's actually Felix Hernandez and Cole. I have to go in and have them in my rotation. The Mariners are kind of hanging around. You know, they're five back. They got to win two out of three here, you think, to stay in it?
Definitely. I think, you know, with the Mariners, they want to go for two out of three, but, you know, you've got to be thinking sweep.
Yeah, and, you know, they did sweep the Astros the last time they played. You know, they took that four-game series in Houston. I don't know how that works out. And, you know, you got to – you know, that's big because the A's get the Rangers at, you know, they're playing at home where, you know, they've been freaking fantastic. So, you know, if you're the Astros or the Mariners, you don't want to come out on the losing end because, you know, Oakland has a winnable series, right? I mean, it could give the A's a little boost in the first place.
Which is kind of surprising. They were back on that A's
spot.
you know that's what got me to read Moneyball. No, but that's
oh, yeah?
What inspired me to read Moneyball. Not the fact that Amazon let me read it for free.
Did you finish that yet?
Last week. The one thing I wanted to tell you about that book, which kind of surprised me at how kind of stupid some people are. The writer, who's actually not a baseball guy, and he's got a bunch of books that he's written on other topics. But, you know, he said that, like, afterward, that many baseball people, one of the ones that the big name that stuck out was Joe Morgan, believe that Billy Bean wrote the book himself to kind of you know, promote himself. And he was amazed, and I was kind of amazed, too, that, you know, a lot of the guys tried to make notoriety of not reading the book, you know, but talking about the book like they've read it, and that it was Billy Bean who wrote it about himself, which was absolutely, you know, idiotic. And, you know, you talk about that all the time, too, about how some of these guys in the game just are so oblivious. And, it's just kind of like... You know, if you're in baseball and you're really looking up to these guys, then you meet them and you realize, huh, he's really just an idiot. You know, not that I looked up to Joe Morgan, but that just amazed me. But the other thing that got to me, too, was for all the, stuff Billy Bean does and looks at and tries to repurpose the game or, you know, which he does in a good way to fit the amount of money he's got coming in for the budget that they have. But at the end of the day, when he was talking to the writer about, you know, his players compared to other players, he compared traditional slash lines, you know, batting average, on base, you know, home runs, RBIs and such. So it was kind of funny to me that you come up with this entire system on how to redraft and kind of redevelop your team. Yet at the end of the day, he just goes back to traditional baseball stats. So it's one of those where, you know, it's kind of like the Joe Madden thing where World Series winning year, he did everything, you know, this progressive thing and having the pitcher bat ace and, you know, doing all these crazy things with the batting lineup. But then we got to the playoffs and Joe Madden went strictly back to traditional baseball, you know. So it's like, I get it, you know, when it comes to the regular season. Yeah, that's the time to try to do some of these different things. But don't sit there and tell me that's how you won when at the end of the day you go back to what has brought baseball to the masses to begin with. Or how the game's been played to begin with.
So, yeah, I actually had somebody tell me they didn't like the movie because it didn't really have a good ending. And I'm like, well, you know, it was a true story. They didn't win anything. Did you want them to fake an ending where they won the World Series? So, you know, I mean, I don't know how you get around that. I mean, it's not based on a true story. It is a true story. So,
yeah, you know, for me, I mean, I'm that jerk that nobody likes in today's world that says the book's better than the movie, which I think it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, part of it was, you know, the second actor. You know, I always forget his name. You always know it. But, you know, when I see that kid, that guy perform, all I can think about is that comedy he was in that was funny, Superbad. So it's
yes.
Watching a movie like that with him in there, it's still hard for me to take it seriously. You know, because I just keep thinking about the kid who had a girl dancing on him and had his leg all bloody.
Yeah, it is always cool when you see those guys in, like, you know, different roles or serious roles, and you're kind of like, oh, wait, now he's this. So
yeah. So, but, I mean, it was a good book, and I think if, you know, if you have your Amazon Prime account going or if they were just giving it away for free, it's definitely worth a read, especially if you're just a baseball fan in general.
I had to double check to make sure I had had Felix in my my rotation today. So
yeah, well, oh, and there's the other thing I forgot that kind of surprised me a little bit. The 2014 GM job, or 2004, sorry, for the Red Sox was supposed to go to Billy Beane, but he turned it down to stay in Oakland because he didn't want to. And I forgot about that. That was one of those things I forgot about. He didn't want to do it for the money. Which, I mean, look at how it turned out for Theo. So,
they do a small segment on that in the movie, but they don't really say that he was offered the job. You know, he has the meeting with them and the big deal like that, and they, you know, he kind of turns it down at the meeting, and they ask him, well, why'd you take the meeting? He's like, well, it's the Red Sox, you know. You know, all this stuff, blah, 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 you guys call, and, you know, I got to take the meeting, so.
Yeah. Now, and I don't know how much different it was from the book to real life, but in the book, he pretty much was given the job, or, you know, he took the job, and at the 9th hour just decided, or the 11th hour, decided to turn it down.
Yeah, and, you know, you do wonder how he would have done with an unlimited budget. You know.
Well, I'm not, I think, you know, when you think about it, for as innovative as Billy Beane was with the system he put together, I think the pressure would have gotten to him where it wouldn't have worked in Boston. And one of the things that they talked about in the book, too, was the Boston media. And they didn't think he could handle it. Where in Oakland, he could just, you know, in Oakland, he was able to, during a game, before or after a game, he was able to get in his car and, you know, drive off or walk around Oakland. And, you know, no one really bothered him like they would if he were in Boston. And, you know, I've been there and, you know, I couldn't tell you all that. But from all the stuff we've heard about Boston and their media, I mean, you make one wrong move and you're a dead guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's pretty interesting. And I mean, to be honest, when you think about the system he had going on in Oakland, and like you said, with the unlimited budget he would have had, it would have thrown him off his game completely. And I don't know if he would have been able to fill that position. But, you know, they do mention that one of Theo's idols or guy he looked up to was Billy Beane, and they did converse a lot up to that point. But Theo's success in Boston definitely, I think, was part of Billy Beane's philosophy, but he also had the money to spend. But then the CBA was different to where he was able to garner a ton of first-round picks along with supplemental picks because of the old CBA and offering that contract at the end of the year. What do we call that contract again, Big Jack? Damn it.
Qualifying offer.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, you know, Theo, I mean, when you look at it, I mean, Theo, and obviously he doesn't get all the credit for this, but he really made his hay through drafting the right players. You know, when you go back and you look at the top of Theo's drafts, he really hit on guys. You know, I mean, you can look at the Cubs drafts, and obviously, you know, you got the Bryants, the Schwarbers, you know, those kind of guys he brought in. You know, and, you know, even Ian Happ, I mean, those guys, you know, it worked out. They were correct on all those guys. And, you know, that's tough to do, even drafting that high. I mean, you get your misses in baseball, and, I don't know how much success he had with, you know, the Red Sox and their draft, but obviously I'm guessing he did okay.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Pedroia was one of his, Clay Buchholz was one of his, and I don't remember the entire list off the top of my head, but I mean, even Xander Bogaerts was one of his, and if you look at that last Boston Red Sox World Series team of 2013, that was essentially Theo's team. Those are all Theo's guys, minus Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, so when did he leave? When did he come to Chicago?
It was like 2011.
Okay, so so you look at, so you figure his last draft was 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe I'm giving too much credit here. he had some big time whiffs. Actually, looking at the guys he picked, I don't think any of them are in the majors right now. So maybe I gave Theo too much credit, but maybe he learned, because he drafted a lot of pitching. So maybe he learned that when you get to the Cubs, you don't draft the pitching. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, he didn't really seemingly draft a whole lot of pitching, because if you go back to 2000, was it 4, that was a good draft. The year that, you know, there was a year when the Cubs were able to get Nomar Garciaparra from the Red Sox, and, you know, I wasn't, at the time I was still more of just a Cubs fan, and, you know, I I'm still this way. I still know more about the National League than I'll ever know about the American League. But when the Cubs got Nomar Garciaparra, I'm like, who the hell is this guy? Why is everyone so damn excited? And then, you know, I mean, the highlight of his career was the frickin', you know, he's probably part of the reason there's a timer on getting the guys back into the batter's box. I mean, Garciaparra had to, readjust his batting gloves 15 times before he stepped back in after every pitch. Not even after every pitch. If you called time, he had to do it. You know, and that was the year where Theo was able to land, because of Garciaparra and a couple others, he was able to get like three supplemental picks in the first round on top of, you know, their first round pick and then some other ones that they were able to acquire from other teams. So, you know, those first 3 years, he was able to get some good drafting going on. And then if you remember, I forget where it was it 2008 or something, where he quit the team, just quit, and then somehow got his job back. And then right before he came to the Cubs was when he was having the issues with Adrian Gonzalez and, you know, allegedly Adrian Gonzalez and the text messages and all that stuff. So, you know, I mean, he definitely the pressure got to him in Boston, where I don't think it's going to get to him as quickly here as in Chicago, or if ever.
Yeah, look at it. In 2004, they didn't have a first-round draft pick, but in 2005, they had 4 of them. One, two, three. They had 5 of them. And it was actually Jacob Ellsbury, Craig Hansen, Clay Buchholz, Jed Lowry, and Michael Bowden. So they hit on 3 of those 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, Ellsbury and Buchholz went on to success with the Red Sox. Lowry is with the A's now, but he's having a pretty good career. What I didn't realize here, did you know in 2003 that Matt Merton was the Red Sox first-round pick?
Going back, I mean, that's something I don't remember, but yeah, that's interesting. He probably came over to the Cubs with Garciaparra.
Probably, yeah. So, but yeah, that was kind of, you could see that was kind of the start of it there, you know, I mean, to hit on those guys. But yeah, then after that, it's weird, because after that, their first round picks really struggle. You know, like they had Daniel Bard, who kind of flamed out. And then the other guys here barely got cups of coffee until you get down to 2011, where it's Matt Barnes, Blake Swinehart, Henry Owens, and Jackie Bradley. So they had a big gap there of success. But yeah, you know, just as long as you win the
first round draft pick, nonetheless.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So he was the guy.
Yeah. And I was right. He was traded to the Cubs with Nomar Garciaparra. What I forgot about this trade happened on the deadline of 2004 was it was a 4-team trade, which we don't see that often anymore, Big Jack. You know, the Minnesota Twins sent Doug McCabe. Man, I forgot this one. Mentowitz. back then I remembered it, but, you know, 15 years later, I don't remember. Yeah. Sent the Twins to the Red Sox. They got Dougie. The Expos got Orlando Cabrera, or they sent Cabrera to the Red Sox. The Cubs sent Francis Beltran, Alex Gonzalez. We remember him as the famous ball through the legs and shortstop, and a Brendan Harris to the Expos. And then, you know, the Expos disappeared. What was it, the next year? And then Justin Jones to the Twins. So that was an interesting trade. But I saw the name Cabrera, and I'm going to switch topics on you. Is Melky playing somewhere?
Yeah, he's with Cleveland.
I heard his name over the weekend, and I was doing something else, so I didn't really know who they were talking about teams-wise. But I heard his name, and I was just like, wait a minute, he's got a job again?
Yeah.
So it looks like he's already been in 43 games there.
Yeah, he signed a minor league deal. And he was up for a little while earlier in the year, and then they had to send him back down. They had to kind of wave him to get him through. And then, now he came back up with their last round of injuries. But, he's I don't think he'll make the playoff roster, but he's going to be on a playoff team.
And, compared to what the White Sox paid, they are getting a steal for $1 million.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he's playing for the minimum.
Mm-hmm. Well, the minimum I'm sure veteran's minimum, right?
So, just one of those, one of those things. But, while we were kind of bouncing here, I wanted to ask you, I keep hearing, anytime I see a highlight of this guy, they keep talking about him, it's Victor Martinez. He's 39 now, believe it or not. He's going to turn 40 in December. He's played 16 years at major league level, so everybody seems to think this is it for him. Is he a Hall of Famer in your mind?
I think he's one of those guys that's right on the edge and depends a little bit more on who. I don't think he's a first ballot, but I do think he could probably make it in within the first five. I mean, that's a possibility.
Yeah, because obviously, you got to take into consideration that, the majority of his years, he was a catcher before, he switched over to really being a full-time DH. So, let me see if I can rack up his numbers here. There we go. He caught 858 career games. The other half, he was a DH for 847 and then 213 at first base. So, he'll actually end his career probably with more games as a designated hitter. But still, 858 games as a catcher isn't bad.
No, and I think that's what will kind of help is the fact that, you really can't consider him just a DH.
He does have, 5 years of postseason experience, and he hit quite well. He's a .315 postseason hitter with 6 home runs. So
pretty damn solid. The one thing, and this goes back to right before the MLB Network started, the talk of Big Poppy making it into the Hall of Fame, and or not making it in because he was strictly a DH. I mean, that was one of the things when I look back on it, I don't totally understand, because that's part of the game. That's what's been instituted into the game since, I mean, I know you would know better what year, but I believe it was the 70s, right? Or what was the 60s when they brought the DH in?
Yeah, I think it was 1970, actually.
Oh, yeah, I was right there. So, I mean, when we were talking about, when they were talking about Big Poppy going, not being good enough for the Hall of Fame, that was roughly like 12 years ago, and you're already looking at, almost 40 years of baseball with the designated hitter. So I never understood how you could just count a guy out completely for a role that was brought into the major league.
The tough part with it, when you're a full-time DH, you're still only playing half the game. And I think that's difficult for guys to really kind of judge on. And, I mean, obviously back then Ortiz wasn't a Hall of Famer. Now he's going to be a first ballot guy. He'll go in on his first ballot, no doubt about it. Like that was a little bit about the debate about Frank Thomas is, he was a DH, at the end of his career and for a lot of his career. But obviously he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. There was no doubt he shouldn't have been. But, there's always kind of questions like that when you see it. And, I mean, even now, in today's game, remember last week you and I were talking about the fact that J.D. Martinez had to play the outfield. They kept referring to him as a DH, even though he'd been out in the outfield over 4 times this year. But yeah, they kept referring to him as a full-time DH. And it's like, do you guys not look at the lineup? I mean, maybe he didn't play 9 innings in the outfield, but he's been out there 40 different times. So, all he does is DH. So.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, Jack. If it were up to the writers and the way things go, you would just have a pitcher on the mound and 9 batters. That would be it.
Yeah.
And I think, with that being said, though, I think the DH is a little bit more acceptable in that spot. But I think the big difference, too, I get what you're saying, they only play generally half the game. But this isn't the NFL where they're only allowed to, a certain amount of votes, or they're only allowed to elect so many people into, the Hall of Fame. Major League Baseball, there really isn't a limit. And, just like they want to put an asterisk on, Bonds and company and such with guys like that. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with them having, even let's just say a special DH hall wing. I don't think it devalues the game any, or it devalues the Hall of Fame.
No, if a DH puts up the numbers to get in, he belongs in.
Yeah.
That's just that's kind of how things should work out. But for some reason, how they are with stuff like that. It's just you look at the numbers. I mean, why the hell did it take Ron Santo so long to get in? He was one of the best third basemen. So you just wonder about the reason. But all right, well, we need to do the plan and wrap it up a month with this. Yeah,